UFOs, are they aliens, government secret projects, the imaginings of disturbed individuals, or just outright hoaxes? We're here to find out. Welcome to Jim Harold's UFO Encounters. Welcome to UFO Encounters. So glad to be with you once again. Now, one of the most interesting areas of the UFO phenomena is that of alien abduction. Of course, they're the classic cases of Betty and Barney Hill and Whitley Strieber, and then you go back all the way to the 50s to the contactees, as opposed to the abductees. But there's not many more tales that are more chilling than the one we're going to hear today. We're joined by the authors of the book Aliens in the Backyard. And I'm talking about Rob and Trish McGregor. They're a husband and wife team. They've been married for 30 years. They've co-authored numerous self-help books on astrology, dreams, the tarot, and so forth. And in addition, they are individually absolutely prolific. T.J. McGregor and Trish J. McGregor, Trish is author of 35 novels, mysteries, suspense, thrillers, and science fiction. She sold her first novel, In Shadow, to Ballantine Books in 1984, and in 2003, she won the coveted Edgar Allan Poe Award for Out of Sight. And Rob, he's not going to take a back seat. He's an author of 19 novels, 14 nonfiction books, and has teamed with George Lucas and Peter Benchley. He writes both adult and young adult mysteries, adventure, and science fiction fantasy. He is a winner of the Edgar Allan Poe Award for Mystery Writing for Prophecy Rock, the first of four novels of a series they've continued on. So we're so glad to have him with us and Trish with us. You're both so prolific. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to appear on UFO Encounters.
Well, thank you for having us.
Now, this story, circle around the story of the Fontaines, a husband and wife who experienced something that totally changed their world in 2011. Tell us who they are and what happened that fateful morning.
Okay. Charles and his wife, Helene, are conservative French-Canadian Catholics who have never thought much about UFOs. They were something for movies and television. And as Charles said to me, I thought if they were real, the U.S. military or government would have told us about this long ago. So he had no real interest in it and no belief in it. However, one morning, late March of 2011, 3 o'clock in the morning, their dog jumped up on the bed. Little dog started growling and barking and snapping and wouldn't get down. It was very unusual behavior for the dog. They finally calmed the dog down and went back to sleep. But 2 hours later, 5 o'clock, Charles had to get up, which is the usual time because he lives in the countryside outside of Montreal and drives into the city, takes his daughter to college. And so he's up at that time. And the first thing he usually does is let Spot, that's the name of the dog actually, out the back door onto the patio, do his business. And this time Spot wouldn't go out. So he nudged him with his foot. Spot went out. And he stepped out himself, and he looked, and beyond his backyard is a farmer's field. And in this field were these strange lights that he'd never seen before. He had no idea what they were. And then at that moment, Spot tripped the sensor on the back light, and the lights came on. And he immediately went in, turned off the light so he could get a better look of what was out there. And he counted 9 of these lights. They looked like, he called them inverted ice cream cones, wide at the bottom, narrow at the top, and there was energy inside swirling around, moving upward from the earth into whatever was up above, which he couldn't see, just a dark shape. Mm. He stared mesmerized at this shape, at these lights for 2-3 minutes, then he realized, I've got to get Helene out here to see this, so He wakes her up, she comes out, and he's happy that they're still there and that he's not just imagining this, that she sees them as well. And she says to him, this is what I saw 2 weeks ago. I was telling you about this, and you were just busy watching television or something. You didn't pay any attention to what I was saying. You thought I was just worried about deer running across the street in front of the car. And then Charles looks to his right in his backyard, And here is another object that's coming behind a weeping willow tree, between a weeping willow tree and the house, and it's like a UFO, or a flying saucer, but vertical rather than horizontal, and it has a strip of lights on the outside of it circling around, and there's these blue, like, O-rings that are swirling around inside of these lights, and it's circling around and coming closer, and he sees this, like, gray shape of a vessel on the outside of this stream of lights, this swirling lights. And it's coming closer. He turns to, he's going to grab Spot and run in the house. He sees Spot surrounded by a gold light, and that's the very last thing he remembers. The next thing, he's taking a shower. He has no idea how he got into the shower. His wife is sound asleep in bed. She later said what happened to her, all she remembers is feeling as if she was floated back into bed, feeling as if she weighed 500 pounds, sinking down into the bed, and the bed just folding around her and going in and falling into a deep, deep sleep. But Charles is very confused. He doesn't know what's going on. Oddly enough, he knows that something happened. He knows there was some experience that he has no memory of. He can't capture what happened. But oddly enough, there is no missing time. Instead, it's like time is contracted. He's right on time, and he gets to the shower. His daughter is up, and he goes off, takes her to college, goes to work, and virtually after that, he just gets in his office and collapses. I mean, he doesn't know what's going on. His whole life starts to unravel at that point, and that's the essence of his experience. But the dramatic things, a lot of dramatic things happened afterwards. All these synchronicities, these meaningful coincidences, bizarre experiences of people coming into his life, that knowing things that they shouldn't know, all that followed in the next few months.
And it's interesting, and this is just one story that's in your book. There are multiple stories about alien abduction that you cover. But what's amazing to me, these are bedrock kind of people, people of faith, sound like pillars in their community, and this strange thing happened to them. And I think that there's this thought that people have who have abduction experiences to talk about. There's a lot of people out there who think, quite frankly, they have bats in the belfry. But but the truth is that a lot of these things impact people who are bedrock citizens, quote, normal people. And there was this amazed me when I saw in the synopsis of your book, several years ago, there was a wide survey that gave an estimate of how many Americans, for example, who may be abductees. And that number absolutely blew me away.
It's astonishing.
Yeah, it is. This was from a Roper Organization survey where people had to answer certain types of questions, like, have you ever seen a ghost? Have you ever found yourself on a street corner where you don't know how you got there, those kinds of questions. And based on that, they came up with this figure of 33 million Americans. I mean, which seems to me like that's pretty serious.
They fit the profile. They not necessarily abductees, but they fit the profile of what abductees are. So it's really astonishing. They have a long list of questions and a very, pretty detailed about have you ever seen creatures, monsters in your bedroom? Have you ever felt like you've been lifted, floated out of your bed? And lots of questions like that are related to UFO abductions.
Now, there's certain memes that we hear, certain themes and certain memes that we hear when it comes to alien abduction. Missing time is one that you mentioned that is seen. Sometimes there is, if the person recalls being taken up into some kind of crap, there is an examination. A lot of times, apparently, there is a focus, or at least what I've heard is there's a focus on sexual organs and reproduction and them trying to analyze that. What were some of the themes that you saw happening time after time? Did they kind of jibe with what we've always heard? And were there some other things that maybe you uncovered or realized that we've not heard much about?
Well, one thing we uncovered was a shape-shifting element to this. One of the women that we talk about in the book, who's a lifelong abductee, Diane Fine, had gone to a rock concert. Mm-hmm. And after she got home, she went to bed and came to in a familiar surrounding in a craft on the table. And except she wasn't laying on the table at this point. She was, I think she was sitting in a chair or something. And there were three grays with her. And at her feet was the rock star that she had just gone to see. She said, "What's he doing here?" And she was told, "Well, we thought you liked him." And she said, "You can't just do this, you know." And so all of a sudden, the rock star shape-shifted into a gray. So that was a little bit freaky.
You know, that's interesting because for people who have followed this phenomena, when you go back to the 50s and the contactee phenomena that was kind of introduced to the public at that time, many of the reports were not of like these egg-headed grays that we get today that jibe with what you see in popular culture movies and TV, but they were blonde-haired and blue-eyed. And it almost seems like whoever or whatever it is putting themselves in a form that we can somehow grasp and comprehend.
That's interesting. These blonde-haired entities are usually tall. I mean, they actually look Nordic. And I believe that Connie Cannon, who was another lifelong abductee that we talk about in the book, one of her earliest encounters, one of her earliest abductions, actually, I think when she was four, was by one of these blonde-haired beings.
And also, when we were first got together long ago and married and went on our honeymoon, we went off to Chile for our honeymoon. And on this trip, we asked somebody on the airplane where would be an interesting place to go in Chile to explore some mysteries of the unknown. We were very intrigued with just finding different cultures that have different types of mysteries going on that we could explore. And the woman told us, go to Chiloé, which is an island off the coast of southern Chile. So we landed in Santiago, spent a couple of days there in the capital, and then took a train all the way to the end of the line, took a ferry out to this island, and that's when we started learning about the ghost ship Caliuchi and its similarities to, which has a crew, and the similarities of the actions of the crew related to UFO abductions. And these, the ghost ship is seen by, has been seen over the years by many people, and it appears in places where it shouldn't, where the shallow water, and the crew is very similar to these Nordics, tall, dressed in black, blonde, and they have numerous abduction stories that have occurred by people being taken. One man disappeared when he was 18 years old. He came back 50 years later. His brother found him in the family's original house. And
wearing the same clothes he disappeared
wearing the
in.
Same clothes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And pretty much out of his mind and telling them, don't ask where I was.
But he aged, I assume.
Yeah, he aged, definitely.
Yeah, he aged.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Another incredible story that you tell, and this, to me, it's a whole new level of frightening because one of the abductees you talked to, was someone who not only found themselves face to face with the grays, but also something that looked like a member of the military with a gun. I mean, this kind of adds a whole new level, doesn't it?
It certainly did. When we first heard Connie's story about this abduction, I was like floored. I mean, first of all, I don't know how anybody can get beyond that kind of experience, you know, as a sane person. So what happened to her, this was in 1981. She and her husband and three sons were moving from Atlanta to St. Augustine, Florida. And Ted and the two older sons were in a moving van on I-75. And Connie and the youngest son, John, were behind them in a pretty hefty car. It was a Regency old sedan with a V8 engine. Okay, really a dream to drive on an interstate. Back seat was filled with their belongings, the trunk was stuffed, the whole nine yards. So it's night, Connie's driving along, and all of a sudden she realizes she's not on I-75 anymore. But she doesn't recall leaving, you know, she doesn't recall exiting the interstate. And she's on a grid of roads without any buildings, no discernible landmarks, and she's incredibly exhausted and confused and scared. And then suddenly, she and her son are on their knees on a tarmac of an airport, and they're sobbing hysterically. There's three spacecraft overhead with helicopters, and there are three grays and several military men, one of whom is holding an assault rifle to her head and threatening her. And the only part of the threat she can remember is, if you ever, you will never see your family again, something to that effect.
Wow. That's just unbelievable.
It's horrifying, you know. And then suddenly they're back in the car. She doesn't have any memory of getting back into the car. The military guys are gone. The grays are gone. The spacecraft are gone. The choppers are gone. It's just her and her son. And she's driving around again on this grid of roads. And her son just falls into this profound sleep. Finally, she sees a convenience store. And this is one of the odd things about this whole story. First of all, there aren't any convenience stores on military bases. You have commissaries, but not, you know, convenience stores that sell beer and lottery tickets and that kind of thing. But anyway, Connie goes inside. She tries to explain to the cashier. She can barely speak. She says, you know, she got lost off I-75, and could the woman give her directions on how to get back onto the interstate? And the woman said, well, you're on Warner Robins Air Force Base, and the only way you can get out is the same way you came in, through the guard gate. Well, Connie can't even explain to her that she doesn't know how she got in. But finally, she follows the woman's directions. She finds herself back on I-75. Meanwhile, her husband and the other two sons are just frantic with worry. You know, this is in the days before cell phones, no way to contact each other. So Ted pulls off the side of the road to wait for Connie. He waits and waits. She doesn't show up. So finally, he figures maybe they stop for a bite to eat or to go to the restroom. So finally, he gets back on the interstate and just drives on to St. Augustine. 3 hours after he arrived, Connie and John pull into the driveway. And they're so out of it that she can't even explain what happened to him. She just goes up onto the porch, she and John, and fall asleep. So, you know, you have to wonder, okay, was this some sort of screen memory? Was this an actual event? You know, what is it? What's really going on with these things?
And the thing is that I you all have an interesting perch from which to look at this, because you've investigated, as you said earlier, in your trip to Chile and in your writing and so forth, you've explored some of the unknown. I know that, Rob, I believe you co-wrote a book on the Bermuda Triangle with Bruce Gernon, actually one of our first guests ever back in 2005 when we talked to him about his book, The Fog, which was your book as well, if I remember correctly.
Right, yes. And as we've been doing these radio shows, we've come across different interviewers who have talked to Bruce over and over again. So he gets around.
Popular guy. But yeah. Nevertheless, has this changed, this experience talking to these people, has it changed your view of the UFO phenomena?
Yeah, I think it has. What we've found out over and over again is that there are meaningful coincidences or synchronicities and other paranormal experiences often accompany these encounters or abductions, and they seem to be an overlooked aspect of the UFO experience. But they seem to be also a thread that may tie everything together. Synchronicity can serve kind of as guidance during and after these experiences, kind of a roadmap. But it's often very, very bizarre. Like, it can range from, like, what happened to Helene, Charles' wife. People that she's known for years who have never mentioned UFOs would start talking about UFOs to her, and she wonders, why are they talking about this? In thinking about her own experience, Charles had very unusual experiences. One of them was when he came home that day, he's very upset and he wants to find out what happened. He goes out in the field and he looks around and but it's the ground is frozen. He doesn't see any markings at all. So he goes over to the farmer's house, and the farmer is in the barn. Usually the lights are on at 5 a.m. He asks the farmer if he saw anything, any lights out in the field that morning. And the farmer kind of frowns, looks at him. He said, "What are you talking about?" "No." And he said, "Oh, maybe it was ATVs, snowmobiles or something. I was concerned that, they might be up to no good." So he goes over to the next door neighbor's house and asks the same question. They're also up early in the morning, but the man says he didn't look out the backyard. But then from another room, his wife calls out. She says, Charles, did you see a UFO? And he says, "Why do you say that?" And she says, "I know you saw a UFO, didn't you? Admit it." And she said, "I think," and he doesn't want to talk about it. He says, I think it's snowmobiles." And she said, "No, you saw a UFO because my cousin, I have this weirdo cousin, and I haven't talked to him for years. He called me 2 weeks ago and said, 'Keep watching in your backyard because there's going to be a UFO.'" And so Charles is just blown away by this. And then he admits that that's what he saw. And so he goes home, and the dog is Spot is still acting kind of odd. He takes the dog out for a walk. It only takes a few steps so down the driveway, and it's favoring its front left paw. And so he comes back in the house. The telephone rings, and it's the next door neighbor's cousin. She has called him and given the number to Charles of Charles' house. And so Charles picks up the phone, and he says, "You have a dog, don't you? Check the dog's front left paw and the dog's neck." And at that point, Charles is just astonished because what happened is there was a little time interim there, and he actually rushed the dog to a nearby vet, and the dog looked at the dog's front left paw and couldn't find anything, but said, "Sometimes when there's problems with a front paw like that, it's actually related to something that happened to the neck." And so now he's talking to the medium, the cousin of the neighbor, and who's telling him the dog has an implant into his neck that was placed in during the abduction, that apparently the dog was abducted as well. So, and Charles feels like he's going crazy now. Of all these things happening to him, and he has no one to talk to about this except his wife, and she doesn't want to talk about it. She wants to forget about it, and so it's and he's afraid he's going to lose his job. He has like a middle management job in an aeronautical field corporation in Montreal, and so it's just dramatic. He about a week later, he goes to a pharmacist, a pharmacy, and he needs some sleeping pills. He and his wife both are suffering serious headaches. Something happened to them. Every day their head is just sharp pains.
Plus pounding. They can't sleep.
And they are having sleeping. So he's asking for some kind of sleeping pill. And the pharmacist comes up to him, looks at him and says, "Where did it happen? Inside the house or outside the house?" And he says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Your encounter." He says, how would you know about that?" And the man, what he does, he gives him something for sleeping and then writes down a name of another man and a telephone number and gives them to him and says, "Call this man." And so this man turns out to be a microbiologist in Montreal who has a lot of knowledge about UFOs and alien abductions. And they eventually meet and he helps him out some. But just these strangers in the know coming out of nowhere who seem to know what happened to him is just – just bizarre. And so that's one of the things we've picked up about these encounters.
We also found out that when you start researching this stuff and digging around in it, you end up having a lot of synchronicities yourself. I mean, in 2009, Robin Bruce and his wife and I flew with Bruce to Andros Island so that they could interview, UFO hunters could interview Robin Bruce about Bruce's flight.
Right.
And UFO hunters had repeatedly asked AUTEC, which is the secret naval base on Andros.
Known as the underwater
Area 51.
Yeah.
And repeatedly asked them for an interview with the commander and for a tour of the base. And they never heard back. They were totally ignored. So we get to Andros. And after filming one day, Bill Burns, the UFO hunter and UFO guy, says, okay, let's drive over to the base and see if we can get a tour and meet the commander, have an interview. Well, we get to the front gate, and the first thing that happens is there's a helicopter hovering very low overhead, and then a police car pulls up in front of the gate. So obviously we're not welcome there. So Bill Burns says, okay, let's head back. Okay, so flash forward 4 months. Rob and I are in Sarasota helping our daughter move into college for her second or third year. And we decided that evening to go down to one of the open-air bar restaurants and listen to some music. It was a Friday night. The place was really jammed. The only two seats were at a high top table with another couple. So we asked, well, could we join you? They said, oh, sure, you know, sit down. So we joined them. And it turns out that the guy was recently retired from the Navy, and his last post was AUTEC. This was the commander who had refused to answer the UFO hunters.
And so now we're talking to him at this bar 4 months.
Amazing.
It's just fascinating, you know, I mean, to have that opportunity and to, you know, talk to him about UFOs. I mean, he pretty much kept to the line that he said, we're not involved with UFOs at all. We're involved in underwater surveillance and testing
of weapons,
testing torpedoes. And I'm thinking, when was the last time we used a torpedo in an act of war? Probably, I think it was somebody looked that up and said it was in the Korean War.
Right. That's what I would have guessed. And by the way, he may have said, we're not involved with UFOs, but did he say anything about UFOs?
No, that was the key thing. And he's right maybe about the UFOs, but there have been experiences that people have had who have worked for AUTEC. There's civilians who work for AUTEC too, and we talked to a couple of them who had unusual experiences of seeing large underwater objects that came up on the radar. And one person even saw he was retrieving torpedoes actually, and looking over the back of the boat, standing on this little platform, and here comes the up from below some huge object. And he can see, like, it's like a cylinder, a huge cylinder, and he can't see the whole thing, but there's something attached to this cylinder. And so it could be like a flying saucer-shaped object coming up vertically. It comes up right underneath the boat, pauses, and then sinks right back down as if it just picked up the boat was right above them. And he said he thought at first it might be some kind of secret submarine, or he said it didn't look anything like a submarine, some kind of secret device or something. But he said, usually over the years you find out about these things, they come to light. And he said, nothing like that has ever been revealed. And it was just an unknown phenomena that he saw, but he knows it was something that was in those deep waters there. The waters go down to over 6,000 feet there, so who knows
fathoms.
What's down there. Yeah.
6,000 fathoms.
Yeah, that's quite a distance. Now, so let me ask you this, and this is really in some ways the toughest question of all, and I don't know that we'll be able to answer it in 5 or 10 minutes. But do you think that there's one thing behind this phenomena? Do you think there are multiple things? What does your gut tell you about these people having these experiences?
We've talked a lot about this. I mean, first of all, I think you have to look at a real basic question. No one knows, you know, because none of us really understand the nature of reality or the nature of consciousness. You know, and Rob and I have talked about how we feel that these abduction experiences are probably related to consciousness. I mean, if there are beings, if there are entities, then they certainly know how to manipulate consciousness, space, and time. But suppose they're not aliens, you know? They might be interdimensional entities who are connected somehow with our consciousness.
Or they could be us from the future.
Yeah.
Or a parallel Earth. What I don't think they are, at least not very many of them, are extraterrestrials, beings that are coming on spaceships from distant planets. Maybe there are some of those, but you know, that's the mode that most of us think in terms of what they are. But that's the nuts and bolts theory, and it really doesn't ring true yet as an explanation, because they are so tied with our consciousness, with the psychic dimension, and it's our idea is that, you know, they could be more likely that they're interdimensional, they're coming from another universe, and maybe there's wormholes that they're passing through, like in the Bermuda Triangle, and visiting us. And another part of the phenomena is that they're physical and they're non-physical at the same time. They can be physical and they can be non-physical. Sometimes they show up on radar. Sometimes they don't show up on radar. So it's a very mysterious phenomena. And whenever we meet somebody who says she has the answers, then we know they probably don't.
That's been my experience in the last 8 years. The more I delve into this stuff, the less I know. When I started this 8 years ago, I thought to myself, this will be great. I'll interview people for 6-12 months and then I'll have it all figured out. That's my reaction exactly now. Yeah. It's the more you go into it, the stranger it becomes.
That's true. Yeah.
An old friend of ours who died not too long ago, last November, Jim Mosley, he put out a little eight-page newsletter called Saucer Smear for years and years and years. And he goes way back to the 1950s when he was editor of UFO Magazine, the first magazine about UFOs. And his conclusion after all of these years is that he calls it what these are beings are. It's the 3.5D phenomenon, 3.5 dimension. So, and you know, he says, you know, there's no way you can just come in here and find out all the answers. It's very complicated and mind blowing.
And so much has been, you know, covered up, and people are afraid to abductees are afraid to speak out because of ridicule, or they might lose their jobs. You know, it's just so it's hard to. It's hard to even wade through what exists without finding more questions.
And there's also screen memories that people encounter that you don't know exactly what it is you're looking at, what it is you're experiencing. Are there really these hybrid programs going on where they abduct people and do these reproductive operations and create hybrids, or is that just part of a screen memory? Who knows?
By screen memory, you mean a false memory that is implanted to try to give the impression that it's something other than what it really is.
Right. Yeah.
In other words, like with Connie, was she really on a military base?
Right.
Where Grays and military people were together.
There's another type of screen memory that skeptics talk about too, and that's when the abductees are hypnotized, and sometimes they say that the hypnotist leads the abductee into a UFO experience, creating a screen memory, creating something that doesn't exist. But in our case, none of the people that we interviewed that we write about ever had. Ever recovered their memories through hypnosis. They all have the conscious memory of their experiences.
The last thing I'll ask, and it's a little out of order, but I am curious about this, is, you know, we're not sure what it is. And I think what you're saying about it being something greater than just little green men holds a lot of water, because for the longest time, kind of almost, I think of researchers like Stanton Friedman, who I've been lucky enough to interview on the Betty and Barney Hill case, along with Kathleen Martin, and people like that. You know, you think of aliens, and that's the thing. But I do believe there's this belief that there might be a sort of grand unified theory of the paranormal, where it's all kind of tied in, where ghost sightings might be tied to this kind of phenomenon. May all kind of be one big ball of weirdness. Now, here's the question, though. Do you get a sense, and again, going back to what you said, it's hard to parse this out, but people many times report being afraid. Do you think there's a sign that these, whatever they are, or whatever it is, it's malevolent, or they're just frightened because this is a really mind-blowing and weird experience that is beyond their frame of reality?
Well, I know that both Connie and Diane Fine, two lifelong abductees, believe that this is a malevolent thing that's happening, that these are malevolent beings. However, Diane also said a really interesting thing to us. She said in her abduction experience that she has also met entities that are benevolent. For instance, in the 1990s, she was working at a marina in California. She had to go up and down a lot of stairs, and her knee was really bothering her. And she didn't have time to take off and go to the clinic. So she had an abduction experience and woke up on a table, and she sees these three grays working on her knee. And she said, wait a minute, if you can do this, why can't you cure my immune deficiency ailments? And they said, well, the knee is mechanical, and the immune deficiency stuff is karmic. And that was the end of the experience. Yeah. She said her knee never bothered her again. When she woke up the next morning, she had a slight scar, or, you know, like a mark that looked like a scar, and it was healed in 2 days.
My feeling about this whole question is that, yeah, what we're seeing a lot of, what people are experiencing a lot of, is something that is considered malevolent. That it's nothing that you want to go through, these abductions. But I think that's only part of it. I think there are other entities, other beings here who are maybe neutral, and there are other beings here who are benevolent. I think it's
complicated.
It's complicated, and it's a whole range. And I think on a higher level, there's some kind of interdimensional war going on between these entities, that some of them are trying to possibly take over the planet, and others are trying to preserve the planet. And some of those that are trying to preserve the planet may have been the ones who actually planted humans here in the first place. So who knows? I mean, that's just a theory, and it's complicated, and it's but it's you know, it's interesting. It's a continual mystery. It's the big mystery of our reality, I think.
One last question, and then we certainly want to let people know where they can find out more about your work, all of your work, not just this particular book. First I want to ask, of all the things that you uncovered during this, and maybe we've already covered this, I don't know, what was the one thing that you just said, or one of the things that stand out, you said, man, now that is weird?
Well, for me, I think it was not just that this particular experience was weird, but that it was utterly terrifying. Diane Fine had a missing pregnancy. And when she was telling me about this, I just thought, my God, I could never survive something like this. You know, just the sheer terror of being told you're pregnant, and then you go to a clinic and examined by a specialist, and you have this weird experience in between, and the specialist then says, this is an unpregnant womb.
Yeah, the experience she had in between is probably one of the most bizarre we've heard about. She and her three roommates were driving to Vermont to this ferry, and en route, they went through the town of Dennemora.
Dennemora.
Right, New York. And then a big fog closed in around them. It got so thick, they decided to turn off the road. There's a gravel road on the right side. They see, they turn off, they drive back there. And lo and behold, there's a barn that's been converted to a bar restaurant. And they go in. There's nobody there except them and two small people behind the bar.
An elderly couple.
Elderly couple, not even 5 feet tall, very short. And they ask for sodas, and they're handed these drinks. And Diane remembers tasting it, and it's the strangest thing she ever tasted. It was very sweet, and that's the last thing she remembers. Suddenly, they're standing at the ferry, and they have no idea how they got there. The time is they came early, so they'd have extra time to explore the town. And the time is gone. They have to rush to get to the doctor's office, the specialist's office, and then she finds out she's not pregnant anymore. So that is very strange. And the postscript to that is, coming back, they found that gravel road. They turned off it, and there's nothing there.
Oh, how bizarre is that?
I mean, so your mind is like shattered to pieces at that point.
So another possible screen memory that maybe was not a barn bar restaurant,
maybe it was
but a craft, a UFO that appeared to be what they saw.
What a fascinating discussion it's been. We really appreciated it. Now, I want people to know where they can go and find this book and then other books that you've done, because I think there's a wide range of books that you've done that would be of interest to our audience who are interested in the unknown side of life.
Probably the easiest thing to do is to go to our blog, because we do that daily. All our books are listed there. And that's at www.synchrosecrets.com/synchrosecrets.
And if you just go to the first part, synchrosecrets.com, that's our website, and you can go from the website to the blog as well. And, of course, to Amazon, too. Just looking up our names, Rob McGregor, Trish McGregor, you'll come across our books.
Well, excellent. Thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedule. Continued success. And if you ever have any more paranormal books, we'd love to talk to you again.
Oh, great.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
And we will talk to you next time. And as always, and I noticed that this was a dedication that Betty Hill wrote for you, an inscription in one of the books. Keep your eyes to the skies. We'll talk to you. Bye-bye.